It's Friday, July 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Greeks prepare to vote on a referendum on a European bailout proposal.
Every morning you do see people basically queuing just to get the 60 euros for each day.
We speak with the author of a new study that calls for a rethinking of U.S. strategy towards the Middle East. Protesters in Bangkok show support for 14 jailed student activists, and Black Entertainment Television announces its annual awards. It's all ahead. A new poll of Greeks, likely to vote in Sunday's referendum on a European bailout proposal, indicates they're nearly evenly divided between a yes or a no vote. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras is campaigning for a no vote, saying it will give Greece more bargaining power in future negotiations with its European creditors. Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund says Greece will need debt relief and another $56 billion in new bailout loans through 2018. Compounding Greece's predicament, the debt-ridden country is cut off from further European aid after failing to repay nearly $2 billion owed the IMF on Tuesday. Meanwhile, Greece's highest administrative court ruled today that the referendum can proceed. Stefanos Kotronakis is a senior account executive for ACI Worldwide in Athens. His company operates systems that power ATMs or automated teller machines, and I spoke to him about the situation. The financial crisis in Greece is continuing as the referendum will be coming up on Sunday. At the moment, how much of a premium is it for people to get cash?
No, it is actually a big struggle, Sarah. The problem is that with the capital controls that have been imposed by the government, people are only allowed to withdraw 60 euros per day. I mean, and there are long queues, etc., at ATMs. From a banking perspective, the systems are working fine. There are no issues like that. But every morning you do see people basically queuing just to get the 60 euros for each day.
I would think this must be especially challenging perhaps for some older people to see that they have enough cash, because they might not be as familiar with using credit cards.
That's absolutely true. I mean, especially pensioners or people in general of an older age, this is really more difficult for them, because quite a lot of them do not even have, cards, either credit or debit, or they have no other access basically to their accounts other than to going to, in front of in a bank branch. So there have been basically, I think yesterday was the first day that bank branches actually opened specifically for pensioners to be able to withdraw some cash.
So generally throughout the country, how are banks coping with this whole situation?
I mean, the banks have reacted reasonably quickly, and they have, of course, reconfigured their systems to really comply with the capital controls that have been imposed. So from a banking perspective, there aren't really any real issues. The real problem is that effectively it's no longer possible to move money in whatever shape or form outside of Greece. So this is the problem. You cannot even buy basically from a company, an online company that is based outside of Greece. You cannot do that transaction now.
So that's very limiting to consumers.
Absolutely. It is very limiting. It's not just to consumers. It's also to businesses. Because effectively, if this situation continues, that practically means that I believe during next week we should start seeing the first shortages in terms of goods at the shops. Because, companies are not even able to import, the basic stuff in order to make sure that they can provide their shops, to keep basically their stocks up.
So that could impact food then?
Absolutely. I mean, okay, it's not a problem that we see now, but everybody, and from what I'm reading in the news myself, I mean, they do expect that if the situation continues for more than 2-3 weeks, then, of course, even food shortages could be an issue, could become an issue.
Okay, well, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I appreciate it.
No problem, Sarah. Thank you very much.
Stefanos Kadronakis, Senior Account Executive for ACI Worldwide in Athens. This Saturday is July 4th, meaning it's the Independence Day here in America. It's a federal holiday to commemorate the Declaration of Independence from Great Britain back in 1776. Our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee, is here to tell us what's trending on the web ahead of the holiday. Hello, G.
Hi, Sarah. For those of our listeners outside of the United States, Independence Day is usually associated with fireworks, baseball games, and of course, barbecues. During the last 24 hours, hashtag BBQ has been tweeted more than 3,000 times, and in the last 30 days, it's been mentioned more than 12,000 times on Twitter. So what does barbecue really mean? The Wall Street Journal has an interesting article on the definition. It's titled, "The Word Barbecue Has Divided the Coalition of the Grilling." That's a play on the phrase, "the coalition of the willing," which Americans have used to describe its military coalitions with other countries. The article says it dates back to the earliest contact between Spanish explorers and the indigenous people in the Caribbean. It stems from the local word barbacoa, which means a raised wooden strip that allowed meat to be roasted or smoked over an open fire. So the word we use now is an anglicized version of barbacoa. But as you know, the word barbecue these days doesn't only refer to the equipment, but also the process of cooking and the meat itself. The article also argues that the word barbecue is used differently in different parts of the country. It says that in the South, it indicates a cooking method, whereas it could mean any summertime cookout in the North. One comment I found under the article was by a reader named Carl Castro Giovanni, who wrote that where he is in the Midwest, the general cooking method is called grilling and that the meat dishes are called barbecue. He added that the events are called cookouts and never barbecues. So depending on where you are in the country, it could mean a whole lot of different things. That's all for me from today. Hope you all have a great 4th.
Same to you, G. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Participating in structured sports can help children develop the discipline needed to be successful in the classroom. That's the finding of a new study led by scientists at the University of Montreal and the CHU's Saint-Justine Children's Hospital. The researchers monitored the extracurricular activities of children beginning in kindergarten and followed them as they grew up, comparing the kids' success on the field with their classroom achievements. The scientists find that by fourth grade, children who participated in a structured sports program were better at following their teacher's instructions and they remain more focused in the classroom than those who did not take part in such sports. The researchers say they suspect that belonging to a sports team or a special group with a common goal encourages children to respect rules and honor their obligations. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, BET hands out its annual awards. A senior Islamic State fighter from Tunisia has been killed in a U.S. drone strike in Syria, the Pentagon said Thursday. Tariq bin Tahar al-Harzi helped raise money for the Islamic State group, oversaw efforts to bring in foreign fighters, and was dubbed the Emir of Suicide Bombers by the U.S. State Department. Pentagon spokesman Captain Jeff Davis said al-Harzi's death will hurt the Islamic State group's ability to move foreign fighters in and out of the region. VOA senior Middle East reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke to Joe Barnes, a fellow at the Baker Institute and a co-author of a new study calling for rethinking U.S. strategy in the Middle East. Mohammed, let's start with Syria. What does the new study recommend?
It calls for expanded targeting of Islamic State militants in Syria to make it more difficult for the group to operate in the country. The study also recommends continued U.S. efforts to target the ability of such terrorist group to finance itself in Syria. But according to co-author Joe Barnes, the U.S. has to be realistic about what it can accomplish in Syria.
Our ability to control events in Syria is very, very minimal. The moderate opposition is extremely weak in Syria. I think the administration is pursuing training the moderate opposition largely in response to domestic criticism and criticism from our Gulf Arab allies. Let's put it this way. I don't believe the administration's heart is in it.
Barnes said after U.S. training of fighters from moderate Syrian opposition, they should focus on fighting the Islamic State group, not the Assad regime. Barnes offered some basic recommendations for the U.S. strategy against the Islamic State in Syria.
Basically, containment. Try to avoid too much overspill into Jordan in particular, but also maybe into Turkey. We've done a great deal of work on the humanitarian side. We should be prepared to do more. Some sort of modest support for the so-called moderate opposition. It's not going to hurt anything. It might help things a little bit.
Joe Barnes also warned against taking the risk of establishing a no-fly zone by the U.S. in Syria.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will meet with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif in Vienna Friday on key disputes that have prevented nuclear negotiators from meeting a June 30th deadline. What does the new study suggest for U.S. strategy toward Iran?
Joe Barnes, the co-author of the study, argued that it is in the national interest of the U.S. to conclude a deal with Iran that substantially limit its ability to achieve a breakout nuclear capacity.
In terms of nonproliferation, it means it's critical, if at all possible, to cut a deal with Iran on its nuclear program. If we can get a decent deal, and I think we can at this point, we need to get a decent nuclear deal with Iran. We do have concerns about Iranian policy in the Middle East. I think its support for Hezbollah is a real concern to us. To a certain extent, its support for Assad is a concern to us. So in the short term, cut a nuclear deal, see if the Iranians comply, which is not at all obvious. See if they comply, and perhaps we can use that sort of a little bit of progress or significant progress to make efforts to improve U.S.-Iranian relations.
He is hopeful that with a better U.S.-Iranian relationship, U.S. may be able to improve Iranian behavior in the area over time.
All right. Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you.
That report by Mohammed El-Shenawy. In other news, a wall that supports 14 jail students sprung up in Bangkok, Thailand, Friday. I spoke earlier with Bangkok correspondent Steve Herman. Steve, I understand that you are at the so-called Wall of Democracy in Bangkok. What is happening there now?
Well, this is a wall that went up on Friday, quite remarkably, where throughout the day, people, mostly students, have been posting notes of support on this wall for 14 university students who are in detention. They are facing charges of sedition and are to be tried in military court for demonstrating against the Thai junta, which has been in power for now about 14 months in Thailand after a bloodless coup May 22, 2014. This wall is being filled with colorful post-it notes with messages of support for the students, such as free the 14, we need democracy, we need elections. They're mostly in Thai. There are some in English. I even saw one in Greek and another one in Japanese. And there's a breeze blowing now, and some of them are blowing away. But others are taped to this wall, which is, I would say, about 8 meters long and less than 3 meters high. I don't think there's much expectation that this wall, in the current atmosphere in Thailand, with the military having very firm control here, that they're going to let this stay. But remarkably, in the last few minutes, dozens of police officers and military personnel took down some barricades that were blocking the entrance to the Bangkok Arts and Culture Center. And most of those personnel now have left the scene. I'm only seeing, about a half a dozen uniform officers in the area looking quite relaxed. So there's obviously some orders that came down for the growing number of forces which had showed up here to stand down. Well, obviously, the authorities, at least tonight, do not want to escalate this, at least at the moment.
Was this wall inspired by the Lenin Wall in Hong Kong last fall?
Well, I think that certainly would be the model, since that's the most recent similar event. And, of course, that Hong Kong wall of democracy, very well publicized internationally. And we've not seen anything like this since the coup began. There were some small demonstrations after the coup and some acts of defiance, like people reading Coffey's 1984 novel and eating sandwiches, which the junta had deemed to be acts against the coup. And right now I'm watching some young women, and there's one in a school uniform posing in front of the wall. This is becoming very quickly quite the attraction for young Thais in Bangkok tonight.
Is it known when these students will be tried?
They are to appear in court, in military court, next week, and that is what has angered their supporters. In military court, they will not have the right to appeal, and we don't even know whether the proceedings will be open to the public. And they're charged with sedition, which, if convicted, means that they face 7 years in prison. So these are the most serious charges that have been leveled against any young people, really, since the coup. And so that has awakened the consciousness of some of the young people in Bangkok, at least.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Steve. That's Steve Herman in Bangkok. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country in the
world. Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition, and now it's time for our music segment. Black Entertainment Television handed out the BET Awards recently, and the show featured some special moments. VOA Soul Lounge hostess Shauna Renee stopped by to chat with David Byrd about the show.
This week, Black Entertainment Television honored the best of the best for the past year with the BET Awards at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles. Here to talk about who won, who lost, and some of the performances is VOA's Shauna Renee. Shauna, thanks for joining us.
As always, it's a pleasure.
Now, this featured music, television, radio, video, and et cetera, but who were the big stars of the night? Who do you think kind of stole the show?
Well, coming in, we knew that Nicki Minaj, the rapper Nicki Minaj, and Chris Brown were probably going to show up more than anyone else. They had the most nominations of anyone else, and they both ended up going home with awards. But I think for me, there were two performances that really stood out. If you were around and in the clubs and having a good time, let's say the mid-90s, then you definitely know Bad Boy Records. They were running things at that time, and they just celebrated their 25th anniversary, and Puffy brought back almost everyone for a massive performance that included Mace, who we hadn't seen for a while, Faith Evans, who we haven't seen for a while, 112, and everyone got uber excited about Lil' Kim. We hadn't seen or heard from Lil' Kim for some time. So,
yeah, I haven't heard her name in any kind of music publication for a long time.
Well, she's been involved in a few internet beefs, as it were, with some younger and upcoming female hip-hop artists, but she recently had a baby. So she's been at home doing the mom thing, but she looked fabulous and she sounded great. And as is always expected with Bad Boy, it was just one of the most energetic performances. I was standing on the couch, dancing along, having a great time. So that definitely stood out for me. And the other piece was the Janet Jackson tribute. She took home the first Icon Award, and her tribute featured the dance piece of Janet. We know Janet is a phenomenal entertainer and performer.
Right.
And a lot of that comes with the incredible choreography and dancing. And Ciara, as well as Jason Derulo, actually did some really interesting stuff with them. Ciara, flawless choreography. She got the look down. Janet showed up. She was there. She accepted the award. She looked absolutely beautiful, and she gave a heartfelt speech, and she expressed how excited she is about coming back and performing and reconnecting with the audience, and it sent chills down my spine. I'm so happy she's coming back.
Well, speaking of people who've made a career in this industry, Smokey Robinson was also honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yes, he was.
And had something to say to the young people about, you know, be thankful for the fact that you, I think he called show business a bittersweet wine.
He was very humbled, obviously, by the award, but I appreciated the fact that a man who has had such a phenomenal career could stand on stage and speak very frankly and honestly about where younger people need to be in terms of their mind, their talent, and their actions if this business is going to continue and black culture in general is going to continue to grow.
All right, thanks a lot, Shauna. That's Shauna Renee. You can hit her up on Twitter at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. You can also hear her host the Soul Lounge. Find that by logging on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And congratulations to all the winners of the BET Awards. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us, and have a happy 4th of July and a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Self-government, that is, a people exercising all the necessary functions of power without interference by a higher authority that they can't control themselves, is a core American value. It's also at the heart of the Declaration of Independence, which we celebrate today. Thomas Jefferson, the document's primary author, wrote that self-rule is the separate and equal station that a people are entitled to under the laws of God and nature. It didn't come easily. America's early history is marked by conflict with other countries threatened by Republican government and among Americans themselves over the ultimate form that that government would take. But the Declaration laid the framework for a nation that would endure and grow, inspiring similar independence movements around the world. When war first broke out between Britain and its North American colonists, few imagined, let alone supported, the creation of a new nation. Historians note that even as the fighting raged, the colonists were deeply divided over the future. Roughly a third came to believe a complete break with Britain was needed. A third remained loyal to the British crown, and a third simply wanted to be left alone to raise their families and do their jobs. The 56 men who signed the Declaration on July 4, 1776, cast the first votes for independence. Their fellow citizens ratified the choice, and with it the then radical principle that government should be based on the consent of the governed. While this is the event and cause we celebrate today, it isn't unique to Americans. It is embodied in the constitutions of many nations and observed in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that we all recognize. In essence, then, Independence Day is a celebration of our common humanity.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.